prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Today is, what is this, 21st day of May, year of our Lord, 2013. Our guest today is our foreign correspondent, Roger S. Sales, who will be with us shortly. First, here's the metals and the equities reports from the markets today. Gold is down $20.30 to $1,375 an ounce. Silver's off 55 cents to $22.47 an ounce. Platinum's down $28 to $1,467. Palladium is down $3 to $750. Dow Jones is up 54 points to 15,390. NASDAQ is up 6 points to 3,502. New York Stock Exchange is up 19.6 points to 9,607. U.S. dollar index is up 0.01, which is not anything to speak of, to 83.82. And crude oil is off 55 cents to $55.89 per barrel. Markets, gold down, down, up, down. It's dramatic changes that are taking place, and there is a real war going on, and it's taking place globally over the price of gold, the prices of gold and silver. And you can see it moving just dramatically for up and down on a daily basis. And I have to wonder how much longer this can continue. This is as overt. We see the market manipulation. We see struggles to maintain the price of gold. We see struggles to drive it down. There is a war going on that's as blatant as a smash and grab operation where a couple of thieves just come up to a window on a store and just smash the window, grab the jewelry, and make a run for it. There's no sophistication. We don't have a story line that resembles It Takes a Thief. You might remember that movie from back in, I suppose, the 60s, no later than the 70s. And you've got this highly technical thief who's breaking in and defeating all the electronic security measures and some. This isn't brilliant. It's not sophisticated. They're just smashing a window, grabbing the gold, and running down the road with it. We have to wonder how long this can continue. Roger, are you here? If you are Roger, you got to turn off your mute button. The producer told me you were here, and perhaps he lied. Oh, he's having internet problems. He's running over to the hotel to get a better connection. It means I'm on my own. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if this is my big break or my big problem, but I'm going to have to proceed on my own with while Roger is renegotiating his internet connection. Well, what do we got here? Let me look. Here's something I want to talk about. That this is an article that I just published on my blog today. My blog is at adask, A-D-A-S-K, .wordpress.com. Again, it's just my last name, adask.wordpress.com. I've got an article up here on notice, the right of inquiry, and Title 18, Section 1001. I'm going to talk about notice a little bit, and it's a far more, most people don't grasp the importance of notice. They don't understand what it means, and my research, I'm not giving you legal advice, I'm not a licensed attorney, but I have run for the Supreme Court of Texas back in 1992, which is supposed to be illegal. I found an 1870 law that said I could, and that's a little bit of evidence that I have a little bit of skill in dealing with law. Got on the ballot, and I received 201,000 votes, and I'm probably the first non-attorney on the ballot for the Supreme Court of Texas since the Civil War. Huh? Now, the winner, of course, had received about 5 million votes, I think. I don't remember. 3 million anyway, maybe 5 million. They received several million votes. The loser, the second place, that would be Oscar Mazzi, the incumbent, he received perhaps a million less than the winner, which was Craig Enoch, the Republican. He was a challenger going into the race. I was, also ran with 201,000 votes, which is a triviality, but then I only spent about $100 on my campaign. Point I'm trying to make, not easy to get on the ballot for the Supreme Court of Texas, and it's supposed to be illegal, but I found a way of doing it. And the implication is, although I'm not a licensed attorney, I'm not a complete idiot, all right? You could ask either one of my ex-wives, and they tell you that I am an incomplete idiot, but not a complete idiot. For what it's worth, I've also been sued by the Attorney General of the State of Texas for $25,000 per day in a suit that had started in 2001 and involved six defendants before I was added, and I was able to devise, with the grace of God, a freedom of religion defense that caused the Attorney General to simply drop his case. He'd invested 6 years and close to $500,000 in that case. And I put a defense together that caused them to simply drop the case. That's evidence that I'm not a complete idiot, all right? Not to say that I'm right, not to say this is not evidence, to say that what I'm about to tell you is necessarily true, correct, and complete. It's an opinion from an unlicensed attorney and from a man who is not a licensed attorney, and that's me. And it deals with a concept of notice. And I've been at this for some time. I've kind of stumbled into this insight dealing with the IRS earlier in my life and with the State Bar of Texas. They tried to sue me for unauthorized practice of law, and I essentially responded to their notice with a series of questions. I've done the same thing with the IRS, and I've done the same thing a couple of times, and over period of years learned that if you can handle notices properly, this appears to be a powerful strategy. My research indicates that the current legal system is characterized by notice. When the IRS comes a calling, for example, their first act is to send you a notice. So far as I can tell, virtually all civil causes of action, especially if initiated by the government, start with a notice. Now, this is interesting because procedural due process includes notice, number one, and opportunity to be heard. That's my understanding. Now, the opportunity to be heard is the hearing where you will be found guilty about 98% of the time. Generally speaking, you don't want the opportunity to be heard. What you want, and you don't, because odds are you're going to be found guilty if you're a defendant about 98% of the time. How do you avoid the opportunity to be heard, which is also an opportunity to be sentenced in most instances? And the answer is you control the notice. Now, most people wouldn't think that you can control a notice, but you can. I've got a note here from the producer. It says, hello. Does that mean Roger is here or it's not here or just being polite? Frank, are you being friendly today? Just say, hi, what is your... No, he's not doing it. He says, no, he's not being friendly. And no, apparently, Roger, that's an old message. Saying hello, that's probably about 5 years old. But in any case, let's get back to notice. What I've come to understand is that when anyone sends you a notice, the way the law reads at this time is the notice need not be complete. They don't have to send you a notice of all relevant facts and law. For example, I could send you a notice to Frank, the producer. I could send him a notice and say, Frank, you owe me $100,000. Now, Frank, and all we have to do is send, according to law that I've been able to access, the only thing I have to do is send him a notice that is sufficient to put Frank on inquiry. And that's what they say, to put the recipient on inquiry. Meaning, I send him enough notice where he asks questions, if he cares to. If he asks questions about the notice, I have to answer. My notice to Frank creates his right of inquiry. His right of inquiry creates my duty and obligation to answer his questions. Now, the problem with this is that almost no one understands that the notice creates a right of inquiry. And as evidence of this, if the IRS sends you a notice, for example, a notice of federal tax lien, down at the bottom they'll say, if you have any questions, please call 1-800-YADA-YADA, whatever the number is that they put in there. They admit at the bottom of their notice you have a right to ask questions, but they want you to ask questions over the phone. Now, I don't ask questions over the phone. I ask questions in writing and by means of registered mail, in order to create evidence that's admissible in court. I get a notice, I respond with questions. Most people, if they get a notice, they don't respond. They just go silent, and they wait to see what's going to happen. And my reading of the law indicates that when you say nothing in response to a notice, after a period of time, and perhaps they'll even send you a couple of notices, but over a period of time, your failure to respond is deemed evidence that you have sufficient notice. Once you have received sufficient notice, now they can take you to the opportunity to be heard, where you'll be found guilty about 98% of the time. You don't want the opportunity to be heard, or at least I don't want it. I don't know if you do, but I don't want the opportunity to be heard. I want to stop this thing long before we ever get to court. If you make no response, in other words, you go silent in response to their notice, it's presumed you have sufficient notice. You can move on to the opportunity to be heard. If you make statements in response to the notice. For example, I send Frank a notice. Frank, you owe me $100,000. Frank says, and Frank responds, says, Addisk, you are crazy. I don't owe you any money. Great. If Frank makes statements, it is presumed he has sufficient notice, and now we can proceed to the opportunity to be heard, where Frank will be found guilty, if I were government at least. Frank's going to be found guilty 98% of the time. The only effective response to notice is to ask questions. You don't make statements. You don't go silent. You ask questions. That's the way it appears to me. Bear in mind, again, we're not giving legal advice per se. I'm just telling you what I've discovered over the years, and I've been studying these kinds of issues for quite a while. And therefore, it might be that what I'm telling you is roughly correct, but you wouldn't want to rely on it unless you did your own research to verify and back this up. But I can tell you this has worked for me on a number of occasions, and it's worked with surprising, you know, with surprising force. Here's something from Wikipedia, and they talk about notice pleading. Right? Some of you may know if you looked into the law, and I don't expect many people will that are listening to this program, but we started out with common law pleading. And then we moved on to code pleading. And then we did something that I hadn't really heard about before, and I stumbled on Wikipedia. There's an article that deals with notice pleading, and it says notice pleading is the dominant form of pleading used in the United States today. In 1938, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure were adopted. One goal of these rules was to relax the strict rules of code pleading. The focus of the cause of action was shifted to discovery. Under the federal rules, plaintiff's complaint merely needs to contain a short and plain statement of their cause of action. When they say the focus of the cause of action today is discovery, what are they talking about? They're saying if you file a lawsuit, you get to ask questions. All right? This is not so far removed from what I'm talking about relative to notice. And they go on and say a plaintiff's complaint merely needs to contain a short and plain statement of their cause of action. In other words, the plaintiff's complaint, which is similar to the notice that I'm talking about, for example, when we're dealing with the IRS, and that's only one example, but the IRS, the short and plain statement corresponds to the idea that the notice need not be complete. The notice, if I send that notice to Frank, say, Frank, you owe me $100,000, I don't have to explain where and when and why I came up with that conclusion. I'm exaggerating here to make my point, but I essentially just have to say, Frank, you owe me $100,000. And if Frank doesn't respond properly with questions, it just might be that I can get him into court and I just might be able to clip him for $100,000, even if the debt is not legitimate. Frank's failure to respond properly to my notice might be sufficient evidence to put Frank in a very big bind. Now, in fact, the courts wouldn't allow that to happen if I were trying to exploit Frank by just sending him an incomplete notice. They wouldn't let me get it, but they would let the IRS get away with it. The IRS can send you a notice that doesn't tell you what the venue of the case is, doesn't tell you about their jurisdiction, doesn't tell you exactly what law you're being charged under, doesn't identify the facts that they have in support of their notice. And if you don't ask questions to find those material facts, it will be deemed that you have sufficient notice. On the other hand, if you do ask enough questions and you are your questions are intelligent and astute and insightful, you can pose questions which the government does not want to answer on the record. And I've done this. And the result is legal challenges simply disappear. They are postponed. They're put on the back burner. You don't hear from them. They don't call you. They don't say you were smart. They don't say you were right. Just don't hear from them anymore. You can slow these processes down and perhaps defeat them by the astute application of questions. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give Melody a call. She should be in the office right now. Today is her day off from this program. Roger is allegedly connected now from Argentina, but we're not sure whether or not we have a good connection, a bad connection, or what have we got, Roger?
We got an insufferable connection, it sounds like. You know,
well,
this internet is, it's like you got to dance with the girl that brung you, you know? There's no other option.
Well, what can I tell you? It doesn't sound bad to me. You seem to be coming in all right. I don't know how I hear.
But choppy on this end. Let me give the audience and you a little background. I just got a new internet service installed today, just a couple hours before showtime, and I was hoping it was going to be adequate to do the show there. And just when Frank, the producer, called me, I noted that it was not. So I had to jump on the trusty steed and run over here to the hotel. And this is where the head end of the internet is in town. So if it's spotty here, it's just spotty. You don't get much better than here. So anyway, sorry I missed the first part, man, but that's the reason.
Yeah, it's all right. I was talking about notice, and I'll just, as long as you're here, I'll finish up with what I've had to say or give folks a summary a little bit. Point I'm trying to make, talking about notice and the evidence I've seen that indicates the proper response to any notice from government. You don't make statements, my opinion, and you don't go silent, but you do ask questions. And if your questions are insightful and astute, you can ask questions that they don't want to answer, and they won't answer on the record, and as a result, they will simply drop the case. Now, I'm not telling you this is going to happen in all instances. I can tell you that it has worked that way for me in the past. It doesn't mean it's going to work that way again. And if you're curious about this concept of notice, I won't go any further into it today on the program, but again, it's the lead article, top article on my blog at this point in time. There'll be more in the future. But for the moment, this is the top article on the blog, and it's at Adask, A-D-A-S-K. .wordpress.com. Stop in, take a look. Article's not overly long, and you may learn something that will be of value or at least interest to you in the future. What's new in Argentina, Roger?
Well, I just want to say that what you're talking about there is a very strong conceptual approach to everything that you do, not only in dealing with government, but with anybody else. Because what you're doing is you're establishing your condition and your position. And if you make statements, those statements can always be attacked or knocked down, or else you're always going to have to defend them. Okay? So it puts you in a defensive position immediately. But if you ask questions, they're switched over to that position. And then if you're astute enough and you've done your homework well enough to ask the right sensitive questions, like Al did to that prosecutor there in Texas, man, you get them to fold their tent and go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost amazing how the evidence we have is not enough to say this strategy is proven. But it's enough to say the strategy is plausible, and the evidence is so strong. When you can stop, you know, the IRS with a series of questions, when you can stop the State Bar of Texas with a series of questions, they just stop. Huh? You can stop the Attorney General of the State of Texas with a series of questions. It seems almost too incredible to believe, and yet it does appear. We've seen it work in a number of instances. I believe it would work across the board. I don't know that to be true. And as I said before, I'm not giving you legal advice. I'm not a licensed attorney. If you think this makes sense, you look at it and make up your own mind. We got an article here, Generation X and Late Bloomers Face the Bleakest Retirements in History. Unless Generation Xers and Late Baby Boomers are able to make big changes in their savings, spendings, and debt habits, they're on track to become the nation's first generations to fare more poorly than earlier groups of retirees. And this is according to a new study from the nonprofit Pew Charitable Trusts. So all they're telling us is, look, it's going to be grim to be, if you're going to be a retiree in the next decade, for example, over the next 10 years, chances are life is not going to be anywhere near as good as you may have hoped throughout much of your earlier life when you're saving. And the reason I'm bringing this up, what about retiring in Argentina, Roger? Is this a bleak situation? Is it a dangerous situation? You know, is it an easy and desirable situation?
None of the above. It's an extremely incredible situation, is what I've found, especially when you've got a government. You know, Doug Casey, if any of you really want to learn about Argentina, Doug Casey, who lives up in the northern part of the country in Capayete around Salta, has written extensively on Argentina. And I got to tell you, over the many years that I've been reading this, because he was somewhat instrumental in my decision to move here. I read a lot of his articles when I was making my decision to move. And everything that he has said then and has said since, I found to be exactly dead on point. So if you really want to get some sort of a focus point, and this may be a goal of yours or this part of the world, that's a very credible store of information there from Casey. You can, because of the blue and the black rate, in other words, the black market for dollars, you know, I can get, in fact, I 10 to 1. I mean, I get 10 pesos to every dollar.
And what's the going rate? What's the official rate of exchange?
5.
So you're getting double. The government will give you 5 pesos per dollar, but on the black market you can get 10 pesos per dollar, which effectively means, well, at least it implies that you're doubling whatever pension money is coming in from Social Security. I believe you're taking Social Security. True?
Yes. And let me put it in let me frame it a little bit better for you. What it means is that you, if you're looking at it that way, you think that you get this great escalation in your standard.
You avoid the de-escalation, if that's
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you're not necessarily getting more, but you're not getting less.
Everybody else is getting whacked so bad that you feel like you're doing better, okay? But you're able to hold on where they're not is really what's happening.
I understand that. Now, it tells us by implication that if you're moving down there and you are your gringo coming in from North America going to Argentina, it may be that the community is a great place, and it may be that getting along with the people is a wonderful thing, but your report suggests that the government is not necessarily your best buddy. Is that a problem for people? And could it get worse?
You clipped on me a minute. The gringo is not your best buddy?
No, the government's not your best buddy. The government of Argentina is not the best buddy for gringos. And what I mean by that, for the moment they have the official rate and we have the black market rate. What happens if the government tightens up and says, if you go out on the black market rate, we'll throw your butt in the slammer for 6 months or a year?
Well, because they're so inefficient, they can't. Yeah, they're so inefficient, they can't find their butt with both hands. And so that's what makes the real nice thing about living here. The bureaucracy is just, I mean, it's atrocious, okay? And it's a totally different lifestyle and way of looking at life. And, you know, as we said last week, I used that old thing I used to hear in the MLM meetings, that even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat, right? Yeah. Well, there is no rat race here. Okay, it's just different. Siesta and there's just a number of factors that make it a real different type of society, even though it looks very similar. And I'm going to tell you, as I've stated many times, I much prefer the Spanish-based culture to the English-based culture. I mean, I've been here 5 years now, and I've got a pretty well gauge on it. And it's just, life is just different here. It's friendlier, it's nicer, it's easier, it doesn't have all the pressures that you have. Yeah, they got government and all that stuff, but they're so inefficient, it's almost a joke. It's a joke with everybody that lives here.
Well, it sounds like there's a strong Italian influence in Argentina, isn't that right?
Correct.
A lot of the original immigrants were Italians?
Very, very heavily Italian and Spanish, and our area particularly is heavily Italian here. I will tell you, Forbes picked our city as one of the 10 best places to retire in the world.
Well, that's what we're talking about. I brought up this article, and they are suggesting that Generation X and the baby boomers are going to have a bad retirement. And I'm wondering, you know, just get your take on whether it's a good idea to think in terms of retiring to a foreign country where you can stretch your dollars. And the point, part of the reason for that, if all we did was look at dollars, it's easy to say, okay, let's go this place where my dollars are going to buy me twice as much as they will in the States, or three times as much, or however. It's easy to look at this from simply an economic perspective, but there are a lot of people that move to foreign countries that can't make the adjustment. And while you feel comfortable and you've made the adjustment, how many people have you run into that ultimately say, that's it, I'm out of here, I'm going back to the States?
There haven't been too many from here, because almost everybody that comes here loves it so much, man. I mean, really. But there have been a couple.
Yeah.
The thing is there's so many other factors involved when you're going to move just besides what your dollar does. And I'll tell you a real big piece of advice, and I've seen other people not do it this way and make mistakes, is that wherever you go, if you decide to leave, go down there. Don't buy a house and throw up a lot and try and build a house and everything immediately. Go somewhere and rent for a minimum of 2 years. I've been here 5 years, and I'm still renting. Okay, and that gives you a feel for where you want to be. If you don't like it for some reason a little ways into your stay, you can always pick up and move. If you're anchored down with a house, you got to sell it, you're going to take a beating, all that other stuff. So, you know, the wise thing to do if you're going to do something like this is to go find a place you like, make sure you like it, and make sure you want to plant your flag there, and then move forward.
I agree with you, because
there's certain steps to doing this that are smarter than others. You know,
I agree. If it turns out you move down there and all you do is rent and you don't establish roots, you kind of look around for a period of time. Worst case scenario, you've just had a vacation that lasted 6 months or a year. You haven't made a move per se, you just took a vacation, if you catch my drift. But once you buy the home and you start establishing roots, now it's not just a vacation. It's a commitment And if you make that commitment the first day you land on shore, you may come to regret that commitment, and you may have trouble abandoning that commitment, or it may be costly at least to abandon that commitment. Where if you're just on a vacation for a couple of years, no problem. I would suppose that your approach to just essentially take that first 6 months, 2 years as a vacation, it allows you to adapt in a non-stressful way. You buy that house the first day you step off the boat or off the airplane, figuratively speaking, and you've made a commitment that all of a sudden, I'll bet you it makes some people nervous. They begin to wonder, have we done the right thing or not? They may be moved too quickly.
Tell you one thing, Al. I sold the last house I owned back in 1998. That's when the IRS took $35,000 out of my backside. I've been done with them people since. But I'll tell you what, I felt like I had 1,000-pound weights lifted off my shoulders when I sold that house, and I just hadn't been real anxious to go and put them things back on there again.
You know, I've talked about this a little bit on one of the previous programs with Melody. I lived in my dad bought a retirement farm in Wisconsin, 100 acres, and his partner bought another adjacent 100 acres, and they ran it as a retirement. And I was up there, and I lived there for a couple of years, and I took care of, they had 180 head of Black Angus cattle, and I took care of the cattle up there and lived on the farm. It was nice, and we had a farmhouse that had been built back around 1900, or at least started. And the farmhouse was interesting because every floor, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different rooms on the ground floor. And not one of them matched up. Where the new room came in, the elevation on the floor was off by maybe a half or three quarters of an inch in every instance. And it told you that the way they built that farm, that farmhouse, is the farmer came in, and he might have been living in a tent for all I know, but he saved enough money to buy enough wood to build one room, which became the kitchen, ultimately became the kitchen. But initially, he and his wife and whatever kids they had lived in that one room. And when he built it, when he had enough money left to get enough lumber to build a second room, he added a second room. And the floors didn't quite match. All right, but he added that second room and then a third and a fourth and a fifth and a sixth on the ground floor and eventually put a second floor over most of it. Point I'm making is by virtue of building the house a piece at the time, he never went into debt. All right? He didn't build until he'd actually saved enough money to buy enough lumber to actually build another room. Now, you compare that with a modern house where you go in and you buy a brand new house, and it's got 2 bedrooms, 3 baths, a garage, living room, dining room, kitchen, and whatever, laundry room, and so on. It's all there, and it's all complete from day one, but you're in debt for 20 to 30 years. And I'm thinking about this farmer, and I'll bet he had that house built in 5 or 10 years, and he was never in debt. And your notion, when you're talking about the stress you felt from getting out, the stress you'd had while you were paying the mortgage on the house, I'm wondering how much of that is based on your debt.
Well, mortgages are a very interesting thing. Do you know what mortgage means and where the word comes from, Al?
Dead hand, if I recall correctly, something along those lines.
It comes from that Latin word, I believe, mortmain, and that means to kill. Okay, so literally the mortgage, and the reason that they call it that, and you know, they didn't have 30-year mortgages in the U.S. till the 30s when they brought the system in. They extended them from 10 to 30, and they don't have 30-year mortgages down here. They don't have very many 20, and most 10, and almost everyone owns their own home and does exactly what you say, and you'll see big stacks of bricks out there, and they'll let them sit there until they pile up. When they got enough, they build another room or make an addition or whatever, and that's the way it's done here. And that's another thing that's very intriguing to me about here is that almost everyone owns their own home. So you're not going to have mass foreclosures of people kicked out in the streets.
That's pretty interesting. No debt. They own their own homes. That'll take a lot of stress out of life. That will free you to some significant degree from the rat race. But we got to get back to a little of the rat race and take a couple of commercial announcements, Roger. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina. We've been touching on a few things from Argentina, a couple of points, and one more, and then we'll get on to perceptions and beliefs. We'll talk about that and finish the program. I have one last article I wanted to mention, just get a perspective from Argentina. The article is, the headline is Stunner, who is suddenly telling liberal jackals to attack Obama. The point of the article is that even liberals are beginning to have a problem with Obama. And I'm looking at Obama myself and wondering if he hasn't already become something like a lame duck president. Now, I'm wondering if you see anything like that down in Argentina.
Yeah, you got a presidenta. I guess you use the A and the female presidenta, Cristina Kirchner, who has got more on her hands than she can handle. And her, the only thing she knows how to try and do is to keep those money presses running. And, you know, I think I mentioned earlier that, I don't know, about 6 or 8 months ago, the government bought the company that owns the presses to print the money. So I guess that tells you kind of what's going on here. All of the
liberals, they haven't bought a chunk of the rainforest yet, have they?
No, they don't have rainforest, man. This is desert.
Well, I'm just saying, if you buy a chunk of the rainforest, so they're sure to have enough wood pulp to make more paper.
Oh, yeah. And else they did, and I haven't mentioned this on, I haven't even seen one yet, but I know they're in the works on the 100 peso note, which is the largest one they print. They're going to change the general. It was a General Ruiz, R-U-I-Z, I think it was some famous general, and they're going to put a Vito Perón on there.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. Let's do some perception and belief.
All right, because this is important. This kind of picks up where we were last week, and I think this is important enough, and I can draw it right back into what you're talking about here today or anything else you want to apply. And I mentioned last week this video I had seen of Bruce Lipton. And he, I had heard him years ago on the Power Hour a lot, and I mentioned him in my book about bringing the conscious and the subconscious together, and the fact that when you're able to do that, it's empowering. And I had some examples of that. Al, I don't know if I told you, I had an early listener, a guy, James Taylor from Eastern Tennessee, called me right after I started doing this stuff, you know, 2 years ago. And he said, Roger, I'm 67 years old. I doubt if I'll ever file any of this paperwork or anything, but simply knowing this information is empowering. And he used the exact same word. Okay. And so, this is Bruce Lipton and his other research. He was a high-level research scientist, I believe, at the University of Indiana, Illinois, somewhere there in the Midwest, doing cellular biology stuff. And he's the one that came up with this: beliefs are molded and strengthened or torn down by perceptions. And you don't go attack beliefs, you attack the perceptions. And this was the example that he used, and I had forgotten it last week when we talked about this, and I thought about it after the show, and it's so stunning to illustrate the point that I wanted to be sure and get it in today. Now, his background was molecular biology, and he said, for the last 50-plus years, every textbook that's been written in any medical phase of medical science or biology, the standard, if you will, of care was that a cell, if you look at a cell, is run by the nucleus of the cell. But in his research, he was able to totally take the nucleus out of the cell, and the cell still functioned properly. So the brain of the cell was not in the nucleus of the cell. That was where the cell could reach in and get chromosomes and genes that it needed to do any repair work or any growth work or anything else it was doing. But the brains of the cell are in the cell membrane. So for
in the membrane.
In the membrane of the cell. So for the last 50 years, every medical textbook, any idea that has to do with anything as basic as a cell, has the entire cellular idea wrong because they think the brains of the cells in the nucleus. Their perception is the brains of the cell is in the nucleus, except when it's taken out, their perception is wrong. So those beliefs are wrong.
Well, it raises a bunch. Well, I understand that. I have heard stories that are unconfirmed, but I've heard stories that a couple of elite schools, colleges in this country actually teach, if you can get into them and get into the right classes, they teach you fundamental principles of physics, for example, that are true. Where if you go to University of Illinois, for example, or an ordinary school, an ordinary college, you can expect that the education you receive will be incomplete and in some fundamental principles false that will keep you from making fundamental discoveries in the balance of your life if you're a scientist, for example. Now, I don't know these stories are true, but I've heard them from a couple of sources and they might be true. The Wharton School of Business allegedly will teach people what's really going on. They will teach you what's really happening in economics if you can get into it. You can probably get, if you get into the right classes, advanced classes at Harvard and Yale, you can probably get a genuine education. So, does, have you ever heard anything like that? That the colleges themselves...
I look at, you know, one of the reasons I think I've been so successful at unraveling this and where I am in my life, honestly, Al, is because I've always thought conceptually. Now, that's something that I've really started hammering on and becoming conscious of. But, you know, all my life I use little stories and little examples and little analogies, and those are kind of conceptual ways of thinking. Okay. And so I think grasping the idea and utilizing it of thinking conceptually was maybe easier for me because I've done that most of my life than it might be for some people. But this idea of conceptual thinking then is a big one because here's what happens. This is one of the ways that they trick you. They trick you with complications and minutia. And the more you get on that direct approach, linear thinking of this word says over here and that statute was changed here and if there's an appendix in the back here and it changed this word here. When you're into that, you ain't never going to win.
Yeah.
And if you do, your life won't be worth living because they've stolen it that you had to put your life into it to beat them. Okay? So the only way to approach this is to go at it from the other direction and go at it conceptually and come at it from a different direction. And, you know, it's the example I use of the truck underneath the railroad bridge and nobody can figure out and the little kids just let the air out of the tires. There's always a way to look at something different that's going to give you a solution rather than the approach that the normal people look at it. Now, take that point. Isn't that what they're generating out of the colleges and universities and schools? They're teaching you you and conditioning you to look at stuff that way where you can't figure this out and live a normal, happy life. And when you can't do that, they control you, and they're controlling you in your mind.
Well, I agree, and part of the way they control you in your mind is by defeating your ability to think. You know, when you and I were youngsters, essentially, a lot of people got a liberal arts education in college. And over time, that has become to be, that's come to be disparaged to some degree. I don't know who gets a liberal arts degree anymore. I don't know if they do, but I assume it's not very many. But liberal arts did something. It taught, gave you a broad range of education, and it taught you how to think, where the more business-like degrees don't teach you how to think, they teach you what to think. If A, then B. They are telling you every time you see A, you got to think B. Every time you see C, you got to think D. They're telling you what to think rather than how to think, and I wonder how many people are really educated to the point where they understand that you are individually capable of original thought.
You may even be responsible
for performing original thought if you want to handle your life in an effective way. On the other hand, if you're going to just do what the politicians tell you, guess what? You know, you're in big trouble.
Well, you see, you are responsible for your own life, and God gives you talents, and he says develop your talents. None of us have the same talents. We all have different ones and accents in different areas and stuff, and you can't develop those as a herd and herd mentality. Okay, you can't become really special and really develop whatever special talent God gave you unless you're an individual.
I agree with you. And when you take a standard education, a cookie-cutter education that teaches you how to be like everyone else, how to conform, how to come to the same conclusion, whether it's right or wrong, we don't care, but you got to have the same conclusion as the rest of the morons in your class, it's not a good thing. It's not an ideal thing, and you have to learn how to think.
I've always just liked being different. I don't want to be like everybody else. I kind of want to be different. You know, when I was a teacher, Al, I was a teacher for 10 years there at the Art Institute of Atlanta. I taught music business stuff. And when I'd get in there and talk to those kids on the first day, and I've taught thousands of young people, probably maybe some of them listening today, I don't know. But I would tell them, you know, where are you from and this, that, and the other, and ask a few questions. What'd you get into the business for? And when I'd get through with all that stuff, I'd say, I can teach all this stuff about the record business here, and you'll learn it, and, you know, you'll go out there. Maybe there's a job for you, probably not. But what I figure my function is here is to teach you how to think. And that's what I did. I tried to teach them how to think when they were my students, okay? And if I got ahead in my curriculum, I'd start teaching them New World Order stuff. And I remember the day that NAFTA passed. I was teaching a class that day, and I came in. This was probably in 1985, 6, whenever it was. And I said, today is an absolutely disastrous day for every one of your futures. Remember it. So, anyway, are we on? I don't even know if I'm on anymore. I just got a message. We might have dropped. Al, did I drop you? Keep talking. Okay. Thanks, Frank. I guess we dropped Al. So, you know, people ask me all the time, Roger, what have you done and what do you do and how do you do this? You know, it's just you got to learn the basics. And the basics, if you set your goals right, in other words, if you stay on a godly path, for me, I've got a real strong will. And when, for instance, when I started reading about fluoride, I don't know, 20 years or 18 years ago, I just said, I'm not drinking anything with fluoride in it. And I've, to the best of my knowledge, have not drank any fluoride to that day unless they slip some in on me, which I'm sure they have. But you got to make those kind of decisions. And what I guess I've found more than anything else is that it takes commitment. And that is a wide-ranging concept because that doesn't just marginalize you to a patriot activity or whatever else. It's commitment in whatever you do in your life because it's not until you make that decision and you say, I want that or I want to do that and I'm going to do it no matter who says no or what gets in my way. And when you make that kind of a commitment, all the excuses mold off to one side because you're single-minded and you're going forward to achieve that goal. And, you know, these are kind of basic, just life rules to live your life and be personally empowered and strong and happy and all those things. And if you do enough of them, you'll get there. It won't certainly be without some pain. Because as the old cliche, no pain, no gain. I think probably everybody understands that really applies, because it's when you go through pain that you really experience growth. At least that's been my personal experience. My biggest growth spurts in life have been after extremely painful instances. And this one right here that we're doing right now on the radio and with the book and all the other things that are happening and swirling around us in our world today came out of a very, very painful incident. So, but I guess that's the way life cycle is. You go through plateaus and then there's rapid hockey stick upheavals. I guess we're getting kind of close to the end. I don't hear anything, but Frank tells me that we're still talking. So at the end, I don't know how much time we've got. I'll tell you that you can drop by my website if you'd like to learn more about my work at www.serfs-up.com. That's serfs-up.com or net. And my teachers who have unraveled totally the tax code, you can drop by and see their work at no1040tax.com. No1040tax.com. And we pretty well got the corner on jurisdiction and taxation, I think. Did I hear somebody back there rumbling around, Al? You back with us?
Yeah, the power went off here. Power just dropped out for a minute, or not even a minute, probably 15, 20 seconds here at my home. And for whatever reason, power went out. And then it takes 3 minutes to start the computer and get that thing running again when the power comes back up. So
sure.
I am back.
Gotta boot every...
Not to worry. Did you miss me, Roger?
I did, Ben, but I
asked. I doubt
good,
it.
So.
I doubt it. You're probably sitting there and saying, thank God he's gone. But in any case, we're both gone. Now, Roger, we're about out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program again. I'm Alfred Adisk here on Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Hey, Al, we're going to be on the micro effect tomorrow.
True.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.